everybody, and welcome to the One Foot Down podcast. My name is Jude Seymour. I'm the writer editor of One Foot Down, and with us tonight is my friend and colleague Brendan McElinden. Brendan, how are you?
Happy Honda Days, Jude. just enjoying the season of savings.
Do you think we've probably talked about this in a previous podcast, but do you think that people actually do the whole, like, do you think that the car dealerships have big red bows that you can put on cars for Christmas?
If they don't, I feel like that's false advertising.
That's a missed opportunity, right?
If you're selling car, if you're buying a car at this time of year, which I don't know who's buying their spouse or significant other, other than the exorbitantly wealthy, cars for the holiday times. I mean, maybe if you were double income, no kids, but all of my money is going to buy presents for other people. The car's not really in the Christmas budget. Though yeah, I guess you could turn your Christmas bonus or whatever into a car. Maybe.
Maybe without trying to give too much away, although I doubt your kids listen to this podcast. Like, what is sort of what are the hot toys for your kids this year? Like, what's on super on the top of the want list? Maybe not something that they're necessarily getting, but something that they've talked about a lot.
We watch a lot of Disney Junior. So they market the toys pretty well. There's this thing called a Magic Mixie, which is kind of the hot button issues for the young girls this year. That was a beast. I went to like 6 different stores to try and find one of these Magic Mixies. I went to a Target once on a lunch break, drove to Celine. They said they had them in stock, and there was like me and 4 other parents, and we're all standing there looking like idiots with our phones in our hands. Like, it says here that you have them. And the guy's like, 16-year-old snot-nosed kid's like, yeah, I'll check in the back, but it's not on the shelf, we don't have it. So we're all just standing there like, who's going to get it if he brings one back? And,
right.
Comes back, doesn't have one, and then I check my phone, see that there's one in Jackson at Meijer. So I drive over to Jackson right after that. And I get there, I go to the shelf, and it's not there. And the lady checks her thing, her scanner, and she says, well, it says that we have one in stock, so that means somebody's got it in their cart. So I walked throughout Meijer, just like stalking all of the shopping carts to see if they had them. I wasn't sure if I was going to offer to pay for it or if I was just going to like wait till they were going to grab some food from a shelf and just like yank it from their cart. I wasn't sure. I mean, this is getting into like a Jingle All the Way scenario.
It's a very Jingle All the Way. Yeah.
But I was able to secure one, this year's Turbo Man, this Magic Mixie thing, which I'm sure she'll play with for about 15 minutes, and then it'll go in the closet.
Do you get frustrated when that happens, when you make all that effort, and then it kind of fizzles? Because I've definitely been there before, where you get excited about a present, and then the kid is like throwing it over their shoulder, going, what's next? And you're like, no!
The worst is when you spend like an hour putting together decals for it, like putting all the decals on the shit. And so you're like putting decals on the presents on Christmas morning, and they want to play with it. And then you get all the decals on there expertly. You bust out the tweezers, and you got to pull them off, right? And then you finally get it all put together, and they barely play with it. They don't appreciate your decal work, and then it just collects dust.
Yeah, the worst. Well, we're flying without our captain tonight. We're going to have a couple of things that we want to talk about. It is a little bit of a slow period. Notre Dame is practicing for the upcoming Fiesta Bowl against the Oklahoma State Cowboys, which obviously will be on January 1st, hopefully on a television near you. Hopefully nobody's got problems with getting that bowl when at the appropriate time. And there have been some bowls that have gone on that – you may or may not have seen based on whether or not you own YouTube TV. there are a couple of things that we thought were worthy of talking about, so that's why we hit record. Maybe first and most interesting was this news coming out of USC that the transfer quarterback Keaton Slovis had mentioned on, I believe it was a podcast or a radio show, that he had mentioned that Notre Dame had expressed interest. Do you know?
I don't know where he said it. I do know that it's been the hot topic this afternoon, and or I guess this morning and afternoon though.
Yeah, and we talked about it a little bit with our friend Greg, who is obviously more knowledgeable about things USC related, as he runs a USC related pod with his friend Michael Muto. But and they talked about it, I believe, on their podcast. But I just wanted to get your kind of first blush take. Why is Notre Dame talking to Kevin Slovis? Do you think there's anything to be made of it? And what are your personal feelings about the idea of Kevin Slovis being at Notre Dame?
Well, I think all the Notre Dame insiders quickly debunked it, right? I think Lloyd came out and said debunked it, and a couple of people did, saying that no, it's not going to be something that happens. You raised a good point in the chat that what was it? It was maybe because somebody might be it could be a transfer thing, and they're just trying to kick the tires and see numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was my first theory, which was like, they know something we don't know, right? And so when you get a quarterback room that is Buckner, Pine, and Jelly, right? And I think that's what we think – and Paulus, obviously, but less of a factor here. You know, why are you looking at a guy like Kevin Slovis? And so the only really two things that came to mind are you like Tyler Buckner, but you are concerned about his ability to be ready for September in the Shoe. You know, you are worried about having somebody behind Tyler Buckner because Drew Pine is not going to be there, or because, I mean, Steve Angeli just, I don't know that you're worried about Steve Angeli per se, but, you know, whether it's Pine leaving or something, you know, something that we don't, and that's what I was thinking. So I don't know. I think that it's probably, you're right, it's probably not worth talking about too much, but you know, I think maybe there will be another quarterback they look.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, I guess if they're going to grab somebody, my hope would be is that they get somebody to just provide numbers. And I'm not sure Kevin Slovis is looking to come in just to provide depth to the quarterback room. Because my hope is that they have Pine or Buckner as the plan moving forward. And Tommy Rees recruited pretty heavily Tyler Buckner. This was his guy. Right. So when they had the ability to recruit, you know, a JJ McCarthy, and they chose not to because Tyler Buckner was the guy that Tommy Rees picked. So Buckner is Rees's guy. So I would assume that, you know, with the amount of reps that he got, maybe 100 so odd snaps or whatever, this year, and that's pretty good for a freshman, that they would feel comfortable enough pivoting towards him running the offense next year. And I don't know if you want to, you know, obviously you're going to let Drew Pine and Buckner have a QB battle. And I don't know if you want to bring in another guy, because then you're definitely going to cause somebody like a Drew Pine to want to look elsewhere, right? Or whoever loses it could be Buckner. So I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of reaching out towards Kevin Slovis, just because I've watched Kevin Slovis play a lot of football games, and I've never been terribly impressed with Kevin Slovis. He had pretty good freshman stats, but he also had one of the most stacked wide receiver rooms, you know, this side of Ohio State and Alabama. So, and since then, I mean, it's been diminishing returns for what he's being, and you don't see USC fans being particularly heartbroken about Kevin Slovis taking his talents elsewhere, which is a pretty good tell as well.
Yeah, I thought maybe it was, you know, maybe they call them as to get a sense about whether or not he'd be willing to play sort of the veteran QB in the room where, you know, nothing was guaranteed in terms of the starting role, but if they needed him sort of a, almost like a three game rental, almost like what Brandon Wimbush did for UCF. I'm trying to think of like maybe Everett Golson for a couple games for Florida State, where you know, you start with one guy, but it's pretty clearly apparent that you're priming the other guy to take over. And so he maybe starts the first couple of games, or maybe he doesn't even ever start any games, but he's always there as the trusty backup. But it's clear that Keaton Slovis has enough juice behind him to be a starter somewhere. So I don't believe he needed to really take that seriously. And maybe that's why the talks fizzled. But I suppose I wouldn't have a problem with picking up, a veteran guy from a lesser program or whatever as a safety net. But, I think it's gotta be ride TB12 or die, basically. I can't see any other scenario that I really think is probably worth it, because if you haven't developed Buckner by September of next year, then I think you got bigger problems than Keaton Slovis or anybody else who might come in.
Yeah, and I don't want to say Tyler Buckner is, going to win, the Heisman Trophy this year, or I guess in 2022. But, I mean, his workload and where he's at, coming in into his potential sophomore season, that's what Bryce Young did last year for Alabama. I mean, Bryce Young threw 22 passes last year and ran the ball, nine times. And really, it was mostly sacks, his runs. So he had even less experience coming into 2021, Bryce Young, than Tyler Buckner. And, Bryce Young was also, the number two ranked player in the nation in his recruiting class, and the number one overall quarterback. So certainly he was, a little heralded. But this is what you do in major college football. If you have a guy that you believe in, you season him, you pepper him a little bit his freshman year, and then you let him take over the reins his sophomore year. I mean, you can look at C.J. Stroud at Ohio State, who Notre Dame will see next year. He had one rush attempt for 48 yards in 2020. And then was a Heisman finalist in 2021, threw for, 3,800 yards. So, that's kind of what happens, right? In major college football now, you put these guys in, you recruit them to play them, I suppose.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think that going the graduate transfer route or, income transfer quarterback route for 2 years in a row maybe speaks to some sort of deficiency in recruiting. I know that, some colleges are acting like this is what they want to do, is have the established guy every single year or whatever. But, Tommy Reese, if you take his comments at face value today, said he's pretty happy with the quarterbacks that they have in the room. Like, you just either start to believe you can develop these guys or at some point you pull the ripcord, but I just don't think we're there yet. So, it sounds like Tom Loy and others are saying that Keaton Slovis is actually going to gravitate towards Pitt. And the reason that would be an option would be because Kenny Pickett just recently announced that he's going pro, which I think is and not going to play in the Peach Bowl, which I think is a great move for Kenny Pickett, because strike while the iron is hot. And also, don't play in the Peach Bowl, because beating Michigan State is a nice coda to Pitt's season if they pull it off. But it's really not necessary for Kenny Pickett's fortunes. So
he would have put up absolutely ridiculous stats against Michigan State. They are the 130th ranked pass defense in college football. Michigan State is. And Kenny Pickett's the highest rated quarterback in college football, stats wise. Michigan State gives up 337 yards per game. Oh my God. They've given up 4,000 yards through the air, Michigan State has. a New Year's Six team.
Is that bad?
It's pretty bad, man. They have given up 300 more yards than the next, worst team. They are just prolific. Kenny Pickett would have had an absolute field day against that Michigan State. I'm trying to the only defense worse in the last I guess is in terms of yards allowed was Oklahoma in 2018 gave up 1,100 yards, and that was in 14 games. Nobody has even come close to touching their yards per game at 337. It's just like team guys are just having career days against Michigan State.
Wow.
Yeah.
So obviously that changes the outlook of the Peach Bowl, but you also told me about another player who's now turning towards the NFL and pursuing that will also change the face of the game. And I believe that's Kenneth Walker, right? Michigan State's running back.
Yeah. He had 1600 yards this year for 263 carries. So they will be turning to either Jordan Simmons and his 54 carries on the year or Elijah Collins and his 12 carries on the year. So Michigan State's offense was Kenneth Walker. So it is going to – I mean, the two drivers of each offense are gone.
Take the old under on this game now all of a sudden?
Yeah, if there's an under to hit, you got to hit it. I don't even know who Kenny Pickett's backup is, but he'll throw for 300, I'll tell you that much.
We're sure shit going to find out. Maybe it's just coming out, you know. But obviously that's another one of those another one of those January 1st games, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think it's the
30th. They play on the 30th.
Yeah, I think it's on the 30th.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think Notre Dame's – their lineup set, right? It's just going to be Hamilton and Kyren, right?
Minus Kyren, yes. And not that he was going to play, but Shane Simon announcing that he's transferring, right?
Yeah, he said he's transferring. I believe he said that he will be playing in the bowl game. He'll be available. No, he said he's not going to be available for the bowl game.
I missed that aspect of it. I thought he was immediately jumping into the transfer portal. So typically that means you're not available, but let me check the fine print on this one.
Because that's it's not that – how many snaps?
Oh, yeah. I'm excited to close out my Notre Dame career by helping my teammates finish this Fiesta Bowl champions.
Yeah, so I think it's just there those two. To my knowledge, there's nobody from Oklahoma State, mostly because there's nobody good enough.
there's nobody worth losing. Roster to make the
move. That's always an aspect, right? The teams that don't have anybody good enough to make that decision. They come in with their team pretty well intact.
Yeah. So, yeah, all systems go in terms of, you know, obviously the two we thought we were going to lose, we have lost. And then everybody else, you know, accepting any sort of, I maybe even don't want to say it out loud, but just all systems go right now. How about that? All systems go right now. So, obviously not looking – I would love for the Notre Dame team to have an opportunity to close this out the right way, to give Marcus Freeman a good start to his Notre Dame coaching career. And I think that can be accomplished with the current personnel. I'm very confident that, you know, guys like Jack Cohn, who, you know, had one last ride and before going off to the East-West Shrine Bowl, I think is what he accepted the invitation for today.
Yeah, can't wait. Can't wait for the old East-West Shrine Bowl.
That's different than the Reese's Senior Bowl, right? Those are two totally different things.
They're different.
I guess
both are appointed.
The Reese's invites haven't gone out yet.
No, I don't think that they've ascended. Don't they use old coaches too? They use old Washington coaches like Rick Neuheisel.
Yeah.
I think Neuheisel.
I think John Gruden's a little toxic right now, but
maybe they can get old.
Certainly, he's John Gruden.
I think Urban Meyer is looking for some work. Maybe they can kick the tires on old Herb, bring him in.
Yeah, it's funny because I think it was maybe a year ago. I saw on my time hop that two years ago maybe, Ohio State announced its leadership course being taught by Urban Meyer, and I get to check all about that.
I hope that if he does get tabbed for the Reese's Senior Bowl to be a head coach, that any field goal kickers on the team decide to wear the Ron Paulus flak jacket during practices.
So rough. So rough. Yeah. Hey, kids, don't kick your kicker. Just a good life lesson, I guess.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Don't kick the small people. Don't really kick the small people. So, One Foot Down has a bold media that's going on. I'm doing pretty pathetically, but I'm somehow still in 15th place. I don't know. Brendan, have you looked at your stats recently? Do you know where you are?
Yeah, I'm still on the first page. I'm at 29th. I'm still in the hunt.
Okay.
Josh
is doing fifth to worst.
Oh, no. there's a lot of games left.
Are a lot of games. I wanted to ask you about whether or not there was anything on this week's menu that was you thought would be worth watching. I know you're probably lined up for that Kent State Wyoming game tomorrow afternoon for the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. But besides that, is there one thing?
Unless they dump out a Gatorade cooler full of like mashed potatoes and gravy on the coach.
They did French fries.
I will be watching.
Did French fries in this?
Did they do French fries? Yeah.
I believe they did last year. They did French fries. Yeah.
They should use my mom's mashed potatoes because they have the consistency of a nice soup. I've yet to watch a bowl game though yet this year. I haven't watched one yet.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, because I was part of the YouTube.
Oh, the blackout
locked me out from the bowl games. So no, I don't want to say that I haven't seen a bowl game yet. What was the first? I didn't watch the ones today, but there was the I watched Tulsa Old Dominion.
Well, the first day you had the Bahamas Bowl.
Yeah, I watched Tulsa Old Dominion.
All right, you watched Tulsa. That was today. Yeah. Yep. So
that's I don't want to say that I haven't seen anything yet, but
Old Dominion opened the game by housing a kickoff for 100 yards and then promptly couldn't figure out their offense. So Tulsa won that one pretty handily. But
I wanted to watch the Eastern Michigan Liberty game. but from my understanding, it was Josh tried to tell everybody to get on Eastern. And the Eastern Michigan Eagles have yet to win. Still, the Eastern Michigan Eagles have yet to win a bowl game. As they lost 56-20 in an absolute shellacking in a perfectly officiated football game.
Yes, apparently so horribly officiated that Liberty was gifted 36 or more points. Is that the reason? 30,
yeah, that's that was Josh's reason that the officials cost him 36.
Yeah. I did chuckle. You know, obviously you guys have that Central versus Eastern sort of, you know, rivalry that's happened between your two respective alma maters, but I did chuckle that, you know, you were kind of giving him hell in the and when people were asking about advice about the confidence picks, which by the way is, I don't know if it's ESPN or just all confidence picks, but it's literally the most annoying thing to do is to click like all your confidence pick. It was just, I found it super annoying.
I wish I could just, it used to be that you could just check the number and then you could flip it that way, but you can't do it anymore. Now you have to like drag them to where you want them, which is an absolute pain in the ass.
And of course, if you don't do it in the exact order from the most confident to the least confident, then they get moved on you too. If you're like, oh, this one, I feel like a 17 on, and then you pick another game that's like, you know, 18, it gets bumped down to 16, right? So
what game curiously do you have as your top pick?
I actually already have it. My top pick was Coastal Carolina over Northern Illinois, and apparently it was a lot more of a squeaker than I thought it was going to be. But I did get the full 44 confidence points or 45, whatever the top was. So I did lose a solid 40 on Toledo, though. I thought for sure they would beat Middle Tennessee in the old Bahamas Bowl, but that did not happen.
Didn't quite pan out.
Didn't quite pan out.
My problem is that I need to readjust some of them because I do have Pitt beating Michigan State is my 44. I thought that was before the decision was made by old Kenny Pickett. So I'm probably going to have to drop that back down. But yeah, I took some heavy losses with Jackson State. I kind of bought into, you know, Coach Dion, primetime, and that burned me. And then BYU losing to UAB, which what a story is UAB. Not having their football program snatched from them and then getting it back, and now they beat 13th ranked BYU. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, if I were a commentator, I'd say, you have to ask yourself, Brennan, if BYU just really wanted to be there, right? Because apparently when a 13th ranked team inexplicably loses to a team like UAB, then it's, you know, well, who wanted to be in Shreveport, right? So
who did want to be in Shreveport, Louisiana?
I mean, it's not my number one pick to hang out in December, but, you know, I suppose the weather's probably better than this. Both of us live.
It'd be better than, you know, playing in, you know, the Motor City Bowl or whatever it is, the Little Caesars Bowl now. That sounds like an absolute playing in the sterile Ford Field environment does not sound very fun in the middle of the winter.
I mean, even the Lions don't like doing it. So.
No, the Lions, not even the Lions want to be there.
Yeah. So leaned into the Deion Sanders hype, mostly because South Carolina State was 7-5, and I just thought there's no way they're going to lose to a 7-5 team. But I put one confidence point on it because I was just like, I don't know these teams well enough to put good numbers on them, you know? So I lost it, but I only lost the one confidence point. So I suppose that's something, right?
That is, if you're going to lose a game, you got to lose one of the ones with the zero.
You got to lose the one.
Yeah. Those single digits. Yeah.
And I did correctly pick Western Kentucky, but I wasn't very confident about it. I only gave that a 7. So Western Kentucky being Appalachian State.
Down at a 5. I lost my 5 and my 2. I picked Toledo and Appy State. So it's not a horrible loss, but man, it's just.
I also overextended myself and went Oregon State. That turned out to be in the Jimmy Kimmel, inaugural Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl with the puking camel and Jim playing clarinet with the band. It's been entertaining. I think I posted it on Twitter earlier this week. There was the 2012 New Mexico Bowl in which Arizona was down 13 points with about a minute and 40 seconds left and inexplicably won. I think those are the reason you watch those random bowls. It's fun.
Who are these people that want less bowls, right? You see them pop up every year around this time and they start complaining there's too many bowls. Who are these too many bowls people? Like, and why do they hate football?
Well, I thought maybe the too many bowls people are just straw men that the major national media puts up to punch down and everyone can jump on and be like, yeah, more college football, not less. Like,
you think it's just a bunch of burner accounts on there?
Todd
Blackledge's burner account to get people to.
Just like, who's complaining about, and based off the reaction to, YouTube and ESPN having their snit fit in the middle of, the FCS playoffs last night, on the 17th, and then having it the outage last a couple of days. It seemed to me there were a lot of people that wanted to watch bowl games. There wasn't a lot of people saying, "Yes, thank God for my $15 back. I wasn't going to watch these bowl games anyways." So
I don't know who these people are, and I don't think that I would be friends with them if I talked to them.
No,
of course not. I don't understand it. I don't understand how you could want less of something that you enjoy or claim to enjoy.
Yeah. No. God, no. So are there any, back to my question from before, are there any bowls upcoming that you're going to be watching, obviously, before we get to January 1st with Notre Dame? Is there something on your radar for this week? Will you settle down with presents and watch the Camellia Bowl or whatever is on Christmas Day? What's kind of the game plan for this week?
What's his name? Akhalib Evans, right? He's the Tulsa grad transfer who spurned Notre Dame for Missouri. I hope he has a fantastic time putting together some cornerback tape for his transition to the NFL as his 6-6 Missouri team plays the Army in their bowl game. On right, so good for him for making
one of
the decision.
One of the two Armed Forces Bowl. I can't remember if it's the military this bowl or the
Lockheed Martin. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And apparently, I've been told that the only thing that Missouri didn't really do very well this year, or did the worst in terms of their defense, was stop the run. So, hey, good luck with that. Luck with that.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to put together a lot of good tape for the NFL in that football game. Playing cornerback against Army. I'm not sore about it or anything, or certainly would have enjoyed having his services, I think. But yeah, whatever. Have fun.
Yeah. Go die somewhere else.
I think the Gasparilla Bowl probably is the game, like, of the games, is probably the one that's the most interesting.
This is at least, the Florida teams, right? UCF and
yeah,
Florida.
Yeah, UCF and Florida. It's not a vintage UCF. Florida was a train wreck this year, but they bring in Billy Napier, and it should be it's going to be an interesting game to say the least. I'm interested to UCF certainly. This game means everything to them. This is basically a Super Bowl for UCF getting to play Florida in a bowl game. So I'm interested to see how locked in Florida is. And I think of the games before, we next pod, that's the game I'm probably the most interested to see.
Yeah, tomorrow night's got one that's of interest to me. I think I mentioned on Twitter, UTSA 12-1 this season against 11-2 and 24th ranked San Diego State. I believe it's called the Tropical Smoothie Frisco Bowl. I've gotten that correct.
Yeah. I had Tropical Smoothie Cafe for the first time earlier this week, and it was awful. Yeah, it was bad.
Well, hopefully the game's a lot better than your Tropical Smoothie Cafe experience.
Yeah, it was like two pieces of Wonder Bread with some Kraft Singles and some out of the plastic container guacamole on it. It was wildly unimpressive for the price. I was like, Tropical Smoothie, I always saw you there, and we finally pulled the trigger, and screw you, Tropical Smoothie, you're terrible.
Speaking of pod, I believe that Josh's plan is to re-release a special podcast that we released around Christmas time. If you've been with us, if you haven't, that will be a nice treat for you. If you have, then we appreciate your download nevertheless. And I believe the plan is to be back at it either next Monday or next Wednesday. So we will definitely be previewing the Fiesta Bowl against Oklahoma State. Brendan will have his usual deep dive into the opposition. Brendan, just give us a little taste here just for before we close out. Give us maybe 90 seconds. You've watched how much Oklahoma State at this point, and what are your kind of first blush impressions of these guys?
I've watched 7 of their football games now. Okay. And I guess the best impression, like, defensively, they're very good. But offensively, man, they're not great at all. They're like I'm trying to think of an apt comparison of what they are offensively. Every game they play looks sort of like they're kind of like a Brandon Wimbush Notre Dame football team in that they run the football pretty well. Their quarterback can kind of scoot. He throws a pretty good number of picks, isn't particularly accurate, isn't particularly smart with the football. And they just stall out. That's the best way to describe Oklahoma State's offense. Is it's the worst offense that Mike Gundy's had in his tenure there, and it is very evident when you watch it. The two Baylor games are a clinic on just ineptitude. They showed up pretty well against Oklahoma. especially, you know, in the second half. But I mean, that's Oklahoma's, I mean, Kansas showed up pretty well offensively against Oklahoma. So, yeah, they don't look particularly good offensively. And this should be a game that Notre Dame, we'll get into a little bit more of the minutiae and the stuff later on. But I mean, just this offense is not great. It is not a New Year's Six team. And honestly, if, you know, Oklahoma State is healthy in that game against Baylor, and they probably are in the college football playoff. Like if Jalen Warren plays, and Jalen Warren's pretty good, he can move. He's got 1,100 yards.
He got a little wiggle.
Yeah. If he plays in that game, they probably beat an also very mediocre Baylor team and go to the college football playoff instead of Cincinnati, probably, right? So
stands to reason, yeah. And then Notre Dame might be looking at the Peach Bowl, right? Against Kenny Pickett-less Pitt.
Against Kenny Pickett-less Pitt, yeah.
Which would prove absolutely nothing.
No. So,
I guess I'm glad for the matchup that we have, not the matchup we could have gotten. So thank you, yeah, Oklahoma State, for coming up 6 inches short.
Yeah, I guarantee you he gets that 6 inches. Jalen Warren gets those 6 inches. I guarantee that. He's only 5'8", but he would have powered through that.
Yeah.
Instead of inexplicably jumping. Do you have, like, as far as the Christmas season goes, is there Christmas movies that are staples in the Seymour household?
Oh, that is a great question. So I've got a couple. I will cop to the fact that now, just because of my lack of interest in my immediate family, I don't tend to watch them every single year. But White Christmas was an absolute must growing up. My sister and I would watch that religiously. We talked to our uncle on my mom's side all the time about that movie. We play little games in terms of, like, you know, noticing things in the background because we'd seen the movie so many times. We'd recite lines. White Christmas just, for whatever reason, means a lot to our family. So we tend to watch that one a lot. It's a Wonderful Life is one of my favorite movies all time, let alone favorite Christmas movies.
Oh.
I can tell you every single – and I share that with Tommy Rees, by the way. Tommy Rees is a big It's a Wonderful Life guy. I learned that a couple years ago. I can tell you every single time in that movie that I cry, and if anybody wants to hit me up on Twitter, I already have a list. I think, an amazing movie to me. And the one that my wife watches that we'll watch sort of anytime that it's on is Elf. You know, I think we went through a whole Will Ferrell glow up in maybe like 2003 when he did like Anchorman and Elf. And, you know, had a good two-year run there.
Yeah.
Before,
Talladega, you know,
before,
Nights.
Before, I was thinking more like semi-pro. Before,
yeah, semi-pro kind of killed it. Yeah.
Yeah. It looked kind of weird. So
for my money, Step Brothers is the peak. But yeah, Elf is very good.
Yeah. So we're big Elf fans. My sister swears by Love Actually. I've seen it once. I think it's trash. I don't get it. I've watched.
It's about National a bunch Lampoon. Of creeps, right? Everybody in that movie's a creep. Like Hugh Grant.
there's really no one to root for. Really no one to root for. That's what I remember. And the other thing is, this is controversial. I'm sure I'll take some heat for this, but I've watched National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation a grand total of maybe twice in my life, and I just thought, what's the big deal both times? Just don't get it.
I imagine Josh would be very upset because this is going to be a podcast where that sent my wife loves that movie. I agree with you. I don't get or enjoy Chevy Chase. Maybe it's because the way my mom raised me was we watched SNL when I was very young. And we were team Bill Murray. And if you know anything about like the history of SNL, you know that Bill Murray and Chevy Chase famously had a spat. So my mom always hated Chevy Chase. So she instilled in me in this young age to hate Chevy Chase as well.
And that's very interesting.
I think Bill Murray punched Chevy Chase when Chevy Chase first came back to host after leaving after that first year. You know, Bill Murray took over the weekend update spot and
You read the oral history of Saturday Night Live from Saturday night? It was actually really good. I don't know if you're a big book guy, sort of oral histories. Came out, I don't know, maybe less than 10 years ago, more than 5 years ago. It was definitely, I listened to it on an audiobook. There was definitely a lot of stories, you know, obviously from the ground up, right? From the 70s on forward. So there was a lot of stuff to listen to. And then obviously I followed that up with the Chris Farley show, which is, you know, written by his brothers about Chris. And I thought that was interesting as well. I don't watch a lot of Saturday Night Live, but I find myself strangely attracted to it because it was a big part of my existence as a teenager. I watched a lot during the, what I would call the Adam Sandler years, for lack of, you know, Chris Rock and, you know, all those guys. So
I watched sort of it through then, like, through, the early 2000s where it was, you know, Will Ferrell and, you know, Jimmy Fallon and,
Cheri O'Terry and, Molly Shannon.
Molly Shannon. Yeah. That was, you know, I caught the end of the Sandler Farley years and really leaned into those ones. I'm a big Jingle All the Way fan, cause I love Arnold and I love Phil Hartman, especially Phil Hartman in that movie. Phil Hartman's performance in Jingle All the Way might be my favorite character in any Christmas movie.
It's funny. I feel like I watched that when it came out and I haven't revisited it. So I'll put that back in the queue and see if I can't watch it because I love Phil Hartman and, his role in So I Married an Axe Murderer. Did you ever watch that movie?
Oh yeah.
So Phil Hartman has a great little scene steal in that movie. So, and I like Phil Hartman. I like News Radio, obviously SNL stuff. I was just talking about Phil Hartman today, obviously Simpsons. Jingle All the Way.
Yeah, he teams up. It's his second team up with Sinbad because he's Sinbad's in it as well. Sinbad's very good. It is it's ridiculous. It's not a good movie, but like there's just something about it that tickles me in a good spot. You know, obviously there's the Die Hard debate. Of whether or not it is or isn't a Christmas movie. I'm not going to put it in my, like, I like Die Hard. I'm not going to put it in my Christmas movie. I think it, you know, it's a Christmas, it's like Christmas, adjacent.
Cause Christmas it is. Adjacent. You know, yeah.
It's Christmas adjacent. I think that's fair. The spirit of the Christmas movie, it doesn't have the spirit of a Christmas movie. You know, like a Christmas Story or White Christmas or, your classic Christmas movies.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I enjoy, do you get down with the Hallmark movies? I know my father-in-law, he watches them all, which if you knew him, is absolutely hilarious that he just buys into the Hallmark movies. I can also say that is also something I have never seen. I've never watched a Hallmark Christmas movie.
If I have, I didn't know it as a Hallmark Christmas movie. So I'm right there with you. My wife doesn't seem that interested in it. Apparently my sister is very, very interested in them and watches them. I can't say that I've ever watched a Hallmark Christmas movie that I can recall. So, which is funny because I feel like that's sort of prime for our wives who are kind of into that, you know, not thinking too hard about anything sort of thing, but
they definitely,
I guess not.
Yeah. They definitely have a market. And it feels like they just spin a wheel and in order to come up with the synopsises of these movies and plots, where it's like, you know, you have three things and that's your Christmas movie.
Now here's something I will cop to. I think still 30 years later, I still have a crush on Danica McKellar. So I did notice that she was in some Hallmark or maybe Christmas movie adjacent Lifetime, maybe their Lifetime. I'm not even 100% sure. So, you know, if she were in one, I probably would watch it, but,
that could be a good entry point for, cause I don't think that's the thing with the Hallmark movies is I don't think anybody is just like sort of into Hallmark movies. The Hallmark Christmas movies, you're either in or you're out. And the people that are in, they're in and they just watch them all.
My understanding is that you could buy a Hallmark channel for like a $6 a month or something like that and just watch as many Hallmark movies as you possibly could consume. So I think there's enough of an audience that they have an app and a subscription platform. So.
Oh, man, and you know what? I honestly say that just as much as anything else, that if you subscribe to the – well, maybe not so much anymore, but if during the earlier parts of this, you know, previous decade, you subscribe to the Hallmark Channel, you were essentially funding USC Athletics. Right? I mean – that Hallmark movie went right into USC Athletics. So that's another reason to shy away from them. Because Aunt Becky was a pretty good staple in the Hallmark movie.
I mean, the rowing program at the very least. I mean, I'm not sure it trickled all the way to football, but, you know, yeah, holy cow. I mean, it very much feels like a spin the wheel. Oh, we got Candace Cameron Bure for this one, and she's matched up with, and it said enemies become lovers, and, you know, classic misdirection, and, you know, grandmother that likes to play matchmaker, and
single father in small town,
Snowden, America. Snowden blizzard causes to come together, you know, it's almost like a paint and match or whatever, paint by numbers.
So. Mad Libs. It's a Mad Libs.
It's a Mad Libs, yeah. That's good. That's a good way to put it. So before we go, I just have one thing, which is I did notice that Micah Pittman announced that he's headed to FSU next year, Florida State. So that takes scratch one off the potential not that he was ever coming to Notre Dame, but scratch one off the potential list of wide receivers. Josh put out an article that I a little bit helped him with in terms of trying to get a sense of who's sort of out there, and not great. It's not great pickings.
When you went through the list, how bad is it? Because so Notre Dame has some stipulations about the type of transfers that they can accept, right?
Yeah. So let's talk about that first. You know, basically we're looking for people that are finishing their true freshman year. Who've completed one academic year, or we're looking for people who have graduated from their university and are now looking for a graduate transfer opportunity. So obviously there's a whole bunch of people that I thought would be there in the middle. And to be honest with you, there were a couple of freshmen, but a lot of people are finishing up their schooling and are looking to do stuff as grad transfers. So there are some opportunities.
A sophomore who was sort of looking at the depth chart and decided that he needed to get out there. Like, you can't get a Jameson Williams, right? From Alabama.
Marcus Freeman could want whoever that he wanted, but the problem is that Notre Dame's academic requirements is they don't take undergraduate transfers after freshman year, right? Okay. And so you're going to be an incoming sophomore academically. And it got a little bit more difficult in terms of finding out where people were in their schooling because of this COVID year. So some people had played maybe three seasons, but maybe had been on campus for 4 years, or maybe they were early enrollees. We see that a lot with Notre Dame where, you know, we know them as juniors, you know, but they finished all their credits, and so they have 2 years of eligibility remaining. So it was a little bit, if you look at my spreadsheet that's attached to, I think Josh tweeted it out, might be attached to the story. There's a couple of like, maybe, because I really just don't know. I don't have their transcript, right? I don't know where they are in their school, and it's really not a top question for a lot of other universities, because a lot of other places will just take them wherever they are. But Notre Dame, you got to be on pace to graduate. You got to be able to get into a major that, Notre Dame offers. There's no, phys ed major or anything like that. So if you were doing criminology or whatever, Notre Dame's not going to have that, right? So that's also a problem. So
like a guy, yes, like Mitchell Tinsley, who he caught 87 passes for 1,400 yards for the Hilltoppers this year as their quarterback. Bailey, they set, all of the records, almost throwing for 6,000 yards. I think he's a JUCO kid, so he's listed as a junior, and he's in the transfer portal, but was he on there, right, as a guy they could potentially get.
Right. So Mitchell Tinsley is graduating, or has graduated from Western Kentucky. So yes, he would be eligible. Whether or not the JUCO thing comes into play, I don't really think so. If you graduated, for the JUCO thing is more like UAB's Kadarius Taylor, who is a junior, but one of those years is a JUCO year. Like I can't imagine that Notre Dame is, I don't know, even if he was graduating UAB, I don't know. It might be a little bit different. So I'm not 100% sure. And that's why the list is sort of like a lot of maybes, with some yeses mixed in there or whatever. But in terms of like freshmen who are out there, I was only really looking at TJ Steele from TCU, Josiah Davis from Virginia, and Latrell Fordham from Eastern Michigan. And Deion Smith from LSU, the one that everybody kind of talks about wanting. Yeah. There's a Keontez Lewis from UCLA. So there's some names out there. And I really only picked, mid to high 3 stars and up, because I just figured if you weren't that highly rated in high school, you probably haven't done enough to have Notre Dame take a look at you anyways. And I didn't cross-check it with number of snaps anybody took. And I also didn't cross-check it with, would Notre Dame even consider taking this person? Does he have the right skill set, right? Because I put Jafar Armstrong on this list, but there's no way in hell Jafar Armstrong is coming back for his graduate season to play at Notre Dame. I mean, I think that ship has sailed, right? So.
Yeah. So that certainly does limp. So a lot of people, if you were scouring the transfer portal for wide receivers, Notre Dame is unequivocally at a disadvantage when it comes to the transfer portal. Right? I think that the biggest takeaway for me is when you went through that, it's just like, this is one of those areas where Notre Dame is at a decided disadvantage from other college football programs.
Yeah, I mean, Brennan made me do the exercise today where he was like, tell me the most notable non-Brian Kelly transfers, right? And it's just like, there's Notre Dame doesn't have it. Yeah, Notre Dame doesn't really have a history. Well, I mean, are they the only five? No, probably not. But they're the five that everyone starts to remember, right? And so, Pat Eilers is probably the one that people from my generation remember just because he played on the 88 team. George Conner probably being the most notorious just because he made the College Football Hall of Fame. But having said that, we all can name all the guys who left Notre Dame, right? And became transferred out and became something else somewhere else. So, So if you think about it, it's sort of like the bit that we constantly do. Brenda, who's your favorite, non-graduate transfer in the Brian Kelly era? It's like, your choices are Amir Carlisle or Loey Gilman, right? So,
Gilman. Yeah. It's like, we'll see how the bowl game plays out for him, but I think Jack Cohn's got a pretty good chance of being one of the more successful when all said and done, and unless he like shits the bed against Oklahoma State, and then we're like,
we'll never forgive him,
and then we'll never forgive him. But I mean, he's got a pretty good chance of being. This will probably be an off season thing, but like who's the best grad transfer or who's the best transfer player to come to Notre Dame football in the Brian Kelly, or I guess in the modern era, is because we can't really say the Brian Kelly era anymore because we're now in the Marcus Freeman era. So I guess in the modern era, who is the this century? Maybe we can say this century. Who's the best transfer this century?
Yeah, I mean it's been a good look. We used to have these debates about Cody Riggs and, you know, Avery Sebastian and, you know, like these were kind of the choices that we got. It's great to have a guy like Jack Cohn who's made such an impression on the team in just one year, you know?
Yeah. Kate Madden's up there. Obviously Louie Gilman.
Sure.
You know, Nick Kate McLeod. Madden's
certainly up there.
Nick McLeod as well.
Yep.
I would say he was a pretty successful transfer.
Yeah. So, so just keep that in mind. I know there's all guys that, you know, that people salivate over, but if they're a Jordan Watkins from LSU and they're a sophomore, that's not going to work. If they're, Sam Brown from West Virginia who's also a sophomore, that's also not going to work. So just remember that when you're looking at the list and it may be my fault for putting out the list without, you know, putting in those caveats in place. I tried to clean it up a little bit, but some people started saying, oh, I'll take the top three guys. Well, first of all, they're not coming to Notre Dame. Second of all, you know, they're probably not.
They probably can't.
Yeah, exactly right. So
is that something you ever see the university changing? Do you ever see them making adjustments to because that's the one, like, Notre Dame has made a lot of strides under Weiss and then under Kelly, as far as upgrading the way that they do business, facilities and otherwise. But when it comes to admissions, that seems like that's something that seems pretty Loctite, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's an example of a tail wagging a dog, right? And so I think Notre Dame prides itself in its academic mission being first and foremost, and football being a supportive of its academic endeavors, what it wants to do, academically. I like to think about, I was thinking about this the other day. Notre Dame took its proceeds from its Rose Bowl win in 1925 to build Dillon Hall, one of its dormitories, right? And one of its longest standing dormitories, not the oldest, but certainly one that's, you know, obviously, 80 years now. Let's see, more than that. 90 years. So
almost 100 years.
Yeah, almost 100 years. So, I guess the answer to your question is no. But having said that, I don't know what the landscape of college football even looks like in 5 years. I think that there's a lot of stuff that's coming down from Alston, that's coming down from, you know, the NCAA deciding it just doesn't want to be in the middle of anything. The pressure on the college football playoff, the NIL stuff. I think that worrying about Notre Dame changing its academic requirements to suit football a little bit better is probably a lot less of a worry about how Notre Dame will look in 5 years than some of the other stuff that I just named.
I mean, the sort of recruiting class and kids that Texas A&M signed this year, kind of speaks to that, because they certainly utilized NIL and some other things in order to get some guys in there, and they put together one of the all-time great recruiting classes.
And we saw that with the number one guy, right? Help me out. Javen Hunter, was that his name?
He flipped from Florida State and to went
Jackson
to
State.
Jackson, right? Jackson State, to play for Dion.
So, you heard Marcus Freeman say that we're going to do it the right way, which means that they're going to stay within the rules, or what they believe the rules to be. Now, I will tell you that I think that Notre Dame has tested the boundaries or pushed the boundaries on a lot of stuff in terms of, maybe a gray area or a less defined area in terms of recruiting. Not to say that they're doing anything illegal. I don't believe that. I think that what they're doing is they're finding out what the NCAA is willing to allow and asking the question, raising the question, right? And they've done some really cool things because of that. but you know, NIL seems it's kind of a Wild West right now, and I think that there might be a reckoning that comes, and I don't know.
Yeah, well, the market, I mean, the invisible hand will eventually settle this down in the next 2 years, 2 to 3 right. years.
So
you can't, yeah.
What remains to be seen, though, is if Notre Dame continues to do it what they consider to be the right way, which is like saying to them, look, we can't arrange deals for you. We can't promise you X amount of money if you come play for our school. But we can tell you about the potential. We can tell you about Kyle Hamilton. We can tell you about, you know, what can be accomplished here. If they continue to do that, and then there is a more naked attempt at other schools to just literally set up, you know,
hey, slush funds.
Yeah, every offensive lineman is going to get $50,000 for, you know, promoting our charity once a month on their Instagram. You know,
and Notre Dame did that with the men's wipes or whatever. The offensive line got a few deals in the offseason, right?
The offensive line did get a few deals. They had the Mission Barbecue deal. My understanding is that they got a free meal out of it, and I think maybe a couple of gift cards. It wasn't anything that you were going to get real spoiled over. It was something that was nice for a college kid, but it wasn't like Mission Barbecue was giving each kid $50,000, right?
Right.
And so,
which is what you see elsewhere.
Right. And you know, and again, not to say BYU has done anything wrong, but you did see that really interesting arrangement with, I think it was Built Bar, right? Where they offered scholarships to, or they essentially paid for scholarships for walk-ons. You know, and so you've had some interesting deals, and obviously people put a lot of focus on Quinn Ewers' deal at Ohio State before
$1 million.
Yeah. And again,
have you heard the rumors about Amorian Walker? I mean, they're all rumors. It's hearsay. Some of it's sour grapes from us. But have you heard the rumors about what?
I did not. What's the rumor?
Supposedly, and this is hearsay, obviously. But supposedly, Michigan came to him and set him up with some NIL stuff, and he inquired with Notre Dame, what can you set up for me? And they said, we can't do that. And that's supposedly something that happened, which is and it kind of falls in line with what you see at like a Texas A&M or some other places where they have these NIL stuff ready to go for recruits before they even sign, is sort of a,
right.
You know, here we go.
Sweetener. Yeah,
sweetener, which in the early stages, I mean, this was always going to be what was going to happen early on, but it's not something that financially or fiscally is responsible, and these rich people aren't going to continue to, you know, these companies aren't going to continue to do it because, you know, you spent $1 million on Quinn Ewers. How was that investment? Right? And you know, you think about the kind of money that QB1 would have gotten in the NIL era, right?
Sure.
And where's he playing his football now? Tate Martell? Early on, this is going to
UNLV?
It's going to look bad. Oh, does that mean we get to see QB1 next year?
Does he still have eligibility? He might.
I don't know. He might. he's not going pro, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, early on, these
We don't have a good history with QBs named Tate coming to our, Anyways, didn't mean to bring up bad thoughts.
Wasn't there a Tate Clawson? early on these deals are going to look – and it sucks because Notre Dame's going to – I pointed this out on the Twitter machine. Guess who gets to play this historic Texas A&M class when they're all juniors in College Station?
I believe Brian Kelly will be sipping Mai Tais on a beach somewhere. I think that's Notre Dame.
I believe that was the quote, yeah. He will not be sipping Mai Tais unless he's fired, which I don't think is outside of the realm of possibility. Sure. But, yeah, just – I think that it's going to look even worse next year. And then it's, I think, 2024, everything's going to start. Because everybody's going to react to Texas A&M and dumb money's going to get tossed around and these – deals are going to start to look like bad deals to the people who are paying for them. And I think probably in 20, if they're smart, they wait before they make any sort of judgment call on them, because ultimately this stuff's good for the athlete, and they should be getting paid, and they should be able to market themselves. You know, they should be able to put – the bookstore should sell a Kyron Williams or a Kyle Hamilton jersey in the bookstore, and the players should be getting paid for them, instead of, you know, you sell a number 23 jersey in the bookstore, and we all know who number 23 is, but the player's not getting any kickback on it. Those players should be getting that.
But the
money,
university
right?
said it could be Golden Tate. It could be.
It could be Autry Dempsey. You know, it could be Drew Tranquil. I got a whole wall of 23s. Got to add iron to that wall.
And I guess I'll add one thing to what you're saying, which is if Amorian Walker followed the money, and you know, I would say good for him, because if anything, if anyone gets in trouble for that, it's going to be the university. It's not going to be Amorian Walker, right? Because he's only literally doing what he's being given, and you know, I believe that players should probably exploit this for a couple of years when there are no rules or loosely defined rules. And I also believe that the NCAA is loath to actually to try to, you know, and obviously it's just member schools, but it's loath to try to, you know, to mitigate the or litigate these fights to play winners and losers and say, no, this is wrong, no, this is right, because they're so gosh darn worried that the Supreme Court's going to come bash them again. Right. And so we have a little bit of an issue here where NIL is a wild, wild west, and the sheriff saying, good luck, I'm leaving town, or I'm going to cower in the corner. Right. So,
and I mean,
if that's true, then good for Amorian Walker.
Wild West was only like, what, 20 years? And then eventually law came.
They settled themselves out. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a capitalist. And I believe that capitalism works, and I believe in capitalism, and this is capitalism. And sure. I don't understand why players can't and shouldn't be able to, you know, maximize their earnings when they're performing a service. And right now it looks bad, but I would be very shocked if in 5 years, these sort of ridiculous deals are being made, these million-dollar deals to college athletes that there's no guarantee that they're going to pan out. Like, you know, Bryce Young should make big bucks next year as an established guy, Heisman Trophy winner. Bryce Young should make all of the money, and he should make all of the money. As long as, you know, the university's not paying for it. Other people are being, why can't he maximize that? It's the notion that they're throwing money at these unproven players, and that's the thing that I think is going to get fixed sort of by the invisible hand once people are like, whoa. Quinn Ewers made $1 million. He still hasn't thrown a pass, and he's going somewhere else. All right. let's pull back the reins a little bit on this.
Right, and so what I think is more likely is that instead of putting $1 million towards one guy, you sort of hedge way more, and you put $100,000 towards 10 guys, right?
Or
$50,000 towards 20 guys. And that's what you're seeing with this Texas offensive line, or, you know,
that doesn't look so bad for, just all of the universities then, right? Cause if you're just dropping big bucks on a singular guy, or a group of singular guys that may or may not pan out. But I think the offensive line thing is something that might be here to stay, where you want to be, you know, lineman U or DBU, right, for like LSU. And like cornerbacks, you come to LSU as a cornerback and you can get into that cornerback LSU, whatever. I don't know. You're selling po' boys at the local, you know, the local po' boy shop down in Baton Rouge.
Right. Well, that's the thing is, like, I think the universities are secretly loving this too, because if you say, look, we don't have to get involved, there's a booster out there that wants to spend $50,000 a year to make sure that we always have three highly sought after offensive line recruits every single year. I mean, what? You'd be dumb if you were the Texas coach not to sell that, you know, right. just to say, look, I can't promise you that, you know, this guy's going to give you $50,000, but I can tell you that every single person who's come before you has gotten $50,000. You know what I mean? And just, and sort of be like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, right?
And I'd rather it be above board and at least out in the open like this
than
like
Shapiro.
a Nevin Shapiro thing. He's paying for players to get on boats in international waters with hookers and then paying for hookers' abortions and just, all, you know, cocaine and all of the ridiculousness that was that Miami scandal from 02 to, what was it, 08? Or maybe it was 11, from 02 to 11 when Shapiro was just like, I mean, that was wild.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I just
– a true lack of institutional control right there.
The fact that Miami didn't get the death penalty for the kind of stuff that went on during that period of time just speaks to the absurdity of the NCAA. They right. should have shuttered that program.
Or maybe nobody should get the death penalty. I don't know.
You know, I don't disagree SMU, with that either.
Maybe, yeah. They came down way too hard on SMU, right? So – anyways, I think it'll be make for interesting watching for college football fans for the next, yeah, I think 5 years is when we're going to see the most flux. And I love that it drives Dabo Swinney absolutely nuts, because anything that drives Dabo Swinney nuts, I'm probably pretty much for. So,
Should focus a little bit less on, players monetizing their value and talents and maybe try and put together a coaching staff that isn't, rinky dink operation. Cause I don't know if you've seen the kind of moves that he's made, to replace, Elliott and Venables, but yikes.
Well, you know, as a guy who is a wide receivers coach, not very highly thought of, I'm sure that he probably doesn't take a lot of stock into what we all think about, you know, identifying talent, Clemson identifying up and coming talent, right? So.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I was looking at a couple of the comments that I made, and this wasn't too long ago, so you probably remember these conversations that we had about Tommy Rees, and just about expressing some nervousness aloud about the fact that he was 27 years old, taking an offensive coordinator position at a school that was top 15 offensive in the top 15 offensively.
National coaching search.
Yeah, being handed the keys to the Ferrari, you know, dad's Ferrari, and not really knowing if he could drive, right? And finally just throwing my hands up and saying, fuck it, I like Tommy Rees. I'm just going to will this thing into existence to make sure that, you know, to say that it's going to work. But there was no guarantee that it was going to work. No. And I think there was, I think we all had.
Clark Lee was also a hire that was kind of like, all right, it's never been a DC linebackers coach, right? So that was also a
right. So, you know, sometimes these are you look like a genius, and sometimes you say, well, I knew this was going to crash and burn from the beginning. But you know, just like the national media guys, I just don't have any sense about who is a home run hire anymore. I'm just glad that every day Urban Meyer does something even worse to make sure that he will never be employed by Notre Dame.
No, never by Notre Dame, but what he's going to get employed again, right?
Oh God. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, Brian Van Gorder got another job. I get that. It's what a high school, right? But like high still, school, right? I mean, there is somebody that wants an Urban Meyer will pay for him.
Oh yeah.
And you know, but I think
he'll coach an SEC school. That seems like a good fit. Or I'm, you know, maybe an unscrupulous, if the Pac-12, he could do well in the Pac-12, right? So
yeah, I mean, look, if I were Urban Meyer, I would just go do bong hits on my own personal boat with all my friends or whatever.
He already did that.
Yeah, I'd go back to doing that. I suppose I would say. Yeah. So I don't think he needs the money. I thought that he did a good job on the Big Noon show. I think if Fox were willing to have him back, I don't know right now. I think he's probably pretty toxic, but, if Fox were willing to have him back, then I think that there's an avenue there. If the right avenue came down, look, people were going to hire Art Briles until there was like huge pushback, right?
Yeah.
So, I think anybody, there's no, I don't think there's anything, there's no such thing as too toxic unless you're incarcerated. I just don't think that, I don't think that exists. I think there's somebody who's depraved enough to say, look, I understand what Urban Meyer is all about with this, what was his name? Josh Smith, the whole thing. And then, everything that's happened with the Jaguars or whatever, but like, you know, he can really make Utah State into a winner. Like I'm sure that somebody could throw enough money at him, you know, and
I don't know if he'd slum it at Utah. So I think that there will be, I don't know if he'll have to go the Hugh Freeze route and go to Liberty. I think he could probably take, say, a good job. I mean, he could take the Arizona job, right? Arizona would take him if he wanted to go to Arizona.
Yeah, I think so.
That tier of job is available to him if he wants it.
Sure.
Definitely not Notre Dame.
I thankfully don't have to spend my time worrying about Urban Meyer or John Gruden, because Marcus Freeman is our future and those guys are our forgettable past, you know.
What about Randy Etzel?
I don't worry about Randy Etzel either.
All right. I'm just making sure.
Yeah. You know? Wow. There's a name I haven't thought. There's a name I haven't thought about in years. All right, Brennan, anything else before we close out this podcast
tonight? Oh, no, I don't think so. I mean, the bowl season sort of begins in earnest with the Hawaii Bowl, right? That's sort of the kickoff for it.
I have a special place in my heart for the Hawaii Bowl ever since 2008.
So. Always have a special place in my heart for the Hawaii Bowl. But yeah, I mean, it's that post Christmas when everybody's off work. And there's
the Hawaii Bulls actually play Christmas Eve, but I your point's well made. So, yep.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like post Christmas. It's like the Hawaii Bowl kicks off the season. Memphis in Hawaii this year. Should just call it the Hawaii Invitational. But yeah, just bowl games every day. For the next, you know, for a football every day for a solid week.
Yeah.
It's not even.
Apparently the NFL is getting in the action too, right?
Yeah. And playing games tomorrow, right?
Playing games tomorrow, played a game tonight. Well, Monday is the typical night for them anyways. Yeah. But, oof.
Yeah, we'll be back next week to talk about some of these bowl games. I want to put some of them on the picks too.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, just see if we can get them on there.
I mean, I'm locked in on Tally Site. I'm locked in on the Bowl Mania. Maybe I'll change them up. I don't know. Whatever.
There's new – like I had Pitt as my 44th ranked confidence, and during this podcast I slid him down to 30.
Nice.
Can't say I'm entirely, you know, as confident in Pitt now as that I was, 5 days prior. So –
that's absolutely fair. I still have him at 41. That feels a little high, but
might want to make some moves. Don't know. I'm not gonna speak for you.
I was gonna say maybe it doesn't really matter. I am looking forward to seeing which one of our loyal listeners is gonna win themselves some home field apparel. Right now it's John. What would you say, Shuley? God, I'm sorry, John, if you're listening and I'm pronouncing your name terribly, then.
Probably just Shule. Probably just John Shule. Yeah.
He has 222 points. Michael Lehman in second has a max of 853. He's also 6-4. And then Daniel O'Brien, who named his pick Home Field Magic, is 7-3 and has a max of 868 points. So
they're all less than me on their max.
Really? You still got some backloaded picks, huh?
Yeah, I'm at 896, so I'm feeling pretty good. Nice. You're up at 910.
I'm at 910. All right. Feel me.
I think Josh is at like 32. So
I just can't wait to see what home field apparel that ends up getting chosen, because I own most of it at this point. And it's all
super, super nice to walk around the house in. I got myself the joggers, and those are comfortable, I can report. And they've got the same drawstring as my hoodie, which I love so much. So I'm feeling pretty comfortable. So hoping somebody else feels comfortable too. And, you know, with a zero entry fee, I think that's about the most perfect way you can do this, right? So fun.
I don't know if you can get much worse than a $0 entry fee for a...
Yeah, and it's pretty sweet. That's pretty sweet. So, all right. So for Brendan in the great Mitten State, and for me up here in lovely upstate New York, snow where I am. I'm guessing the same for you, Brendan. You got snow on your ground?
No, we don't have a single inch of snow.
Oh, wow.
We are snowless. We will be have another brown Christmas this year.
Wow. Yeah, I got about I think probably got about 6 inches here. So for the two of us and for our compadre Josh, who will hopefully be joining us on the next OFD podcast. I'm Jude, and have a great night, and go Irish.